Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Liel welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, February 22nd, 2013. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Ra Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and the community website, bringforth.org, that's bring4th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hi, Carla and Jim. Are you there?
Hey, we're sure here.
Okay. How are you doing this week?
Well, it's been an interesting week. It's been an interesting day. I set out this morning. It was supposed to be the day of my operation, you know, to clean up my back. Mm-hmm. And instead, I was going for an echocardiogram. And you should have seen me. There I was in my wheelchair with 1, 2, 3, 4 pillows, 3 little roll pillows, and a great big body pillow that's, you know, almost as long as I am, because I was going to have to lie on my side, and it's really hard for me to do something like that. I mean, it's just really, really hard. So we figured we could prop me up with pillows. And we did. Thank God I brought them because we used them all. And got me in the best shape I could possibly be in and got the test done. And I got my note from the, you know, from the doctor saying that I'm okay and that I can have the operation. So now all that is waiting is to have the surgeon reschedule me and hopefully he'll do it promptly now that everything's, you know, in train.
We had to do all of that because last week during the pre-op exam, they have that before every surgery, they discovered an unusual EKG reading for Carla. And we knew from previous experience that she has an abnormal EKG, which is normal for her. But this one apparently was abnormal enough that her family doctor decided she needed a couple more tests to be sure she was surgery worthy. So she passed the second EKG yesterday with flying colors. And today she needed to take this echocardiogram because she's for years had this heart murmur. Her heart kind of beats a couple times fast and then takes a little rest and beats again every now and then. So that checked out okay, and so she's passed both tests. She was always good at taking tests. And now we're waiting for a new schedule for the surgery.
Okay. Well, I sure hope everything goes great with that. So
thanks.
That
I really have a good feeling about it. There's just so much prayer energy and focused on this. And I've been doing affirmations like crazy. And I think all is well. I really feel strong and good and healthy and ready to, you know, get healthier. And it's really a good chance for me to get closed up. You know, I've been walking around with a big open surgical wound in my back that they kept trying to close 2 years ago. And every time they would, you know, what they call debride it, scrape it out and get it cleaned up and close, then something or other would happen that it would all swell up inside and the drains would fail and everything would become infected. And it would have to be done again. And it was done 8 times before they finally decided, well, this isn't going to work. You know, it's like, brilliant. Thank you very much. And then they tried wound vac, so-called. You know, that was another option. And it was actually working. It just wasn't working quickly. It was like it was going to take a couple of years for a wound vac to work. And Medicare simply did not want to pay for something that was not working that well. It was going to take that long. They didn't think it was worth it. And so they just took me off it. And so Jim has been faithfully changing the bandage on this wound twice a day, you know, every day, in and out, rain or shine. And no infection, everything's fine, but it's just, you know, nature is not going to close that wound. So it's a good chance for me to have my next shot at actually closing it and hoping that this time it being done by a plastic surgeon who has been working on my case for some time and is really very skillful and very oriented towards helping me. You know, I've managed to get a good relationship going with the doctor. He's fond of me. You know, this is really important. I was talking to Jim about that this morning. You know, it's so difficult, especially with a surgeon, to get a good relationship going because, you know, you're just in there for 40 minutes or 6 hours or however long it takes to do the procedure. And other than that, they don't see you. So, you know, how can you create a relationship? But I've been seeing this guy for a couple of years now. And, you know, I was put in his hands after the wound vac was starting to fail. And he's been trying to get me in shape to close for some time. So he's going to do skin grafts, take skin from other parts of my back and you know, bring it to help the where the wound is. And it, you know, it has every possibility of working this time. So I'm jazzed. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to having it behind me, shall we say. Ha ha. It's back surgery. And, you know, really putting my affirmations, my intentions, my energy into healing and, you know, expressing myself as healthy and well and sound and good. I'm ready for that.
Okay, wonderful.
So that's the deal.
All right.
I hope you're okay.
Yeah, doing great. Great. Definitely will continue to hold you in my prayers, and I know there's lots of people out there doing the same.
Well, thank
we
you
want
so
to
much.
See you healthy, too. All right. So that means we may or may not be here next week. So we'll
That's
just have to keep,
gotta
keep
play it
puzzled.
By ear for a while mm-hmm. here, guys.
So for everyone, please just check bringforth.org, bring the number 4th.org, and I'll put a notice up whether we're having a show next Friday or not, depending on what's going on with Carla's surgery. Okay. Well, the opening riff tonight is from The Law of One, session 48.7. Questioner, I would like to take as an example an entity starting before birth who is roughly high on the seniority list for positive polarization and possible harvest ability at the end of the cycle, and make a full circuit from a point prior to incarnation back around through incarnation and death. You might say one cycle of incarnation in this density. Could you do that for me? I am Ra. Your query is most distorted, for it assumes that creations are alike. Each mind-body-spirit complex has its own patterns of activation and its own rhythms of awakening. The important thing for harvest is the harmonious balance between the various energy centers of the mind-body-spirit complex. This is to be noted as of relative import. The entity before incarnation dwells in the appropriate place in time-space. Those entities, for instance, which, being wanderers, have the green, blue, or indigo true color core of mind-body-spirit complex, will have rested therein. The young or small physical mind-body-spirit complex has the seven energy centers potentiated before the birthing process. There are also analogs in time-space of these energy centers corresponding to the seven energy centers in each of the seven true color densities. Thus, in the microcosm exists all the experience that is prepared. It is as though the infant contains the universe. The patterns of activation of an entity of high seniority will undoubtedly move with some rapidity to the green ray level, which is the springboard to primary blue. There is always some difficulty in penetrating blue primary energy, for it requires that which your people have in great paucity, that is, honesty.
Thank you, Monica. If you read Ra for a while, you begin to see that there are a few principles that come up again and again in various arrangements, in various situations. And in this situation, Don is trying to get a feel for, well, what can we expect in terms of patterns of activation, you know, what should we expect at age 10, age 20, and so forth? And Raja says, your query is most distorted because it assumes that people are alike, and of course they aren't. But even though we know that we're unique, there's only one of us, we somehow feel that, well, if we're wanderers, doesn't that explain so much? Well, it explains some things, yes. It explains why it's easy to get into the heart compared to some other people, or why you simply cannot get into the heart no matter how hard you try, because there's a massive blockage there that you put there before birth, because you're having to work with that. You're trying to open your heart more, and so it's the exact opposite of you know, it's the reverse wanderer. I've known one, and the heart is there waiting to be opened, but it's very, very difficult for the wanderer to do so, and it takes work. It takes tremendous determination and simple, plain work. So you say, well, it seems, Carla, as if you're always encouraging us to suck it up and work harder, you know, not so much have fun as work. And it's true. In the realm of the spiritual, work is hard to define because it doesn't show. But if you think of yourself as a person that uses masks in daily life, you could begin to get an idea of what the Ra group meant when he talked about honesty. And the fact that we don't tend to value that in ourselves to the point where we will gently, lovingly lay aside whatever masks we find that we are wearing so that we can get to what's beneath. I had a friend one time. Her name was Jane. She was Miss Kentucky back in the 50s. An absolutely beautiful woman. Still beautiful to this day. Just good bones. You know, you can't keep a beautiful woman down. She just looks beautiful as a 70-year-old now. She's brilliant. You know, she was the life of the party. She raised four kids. She did everything so terribly well, so beautifully, so, you know, with such style. And it surprised me greatly when she told me one time that she felt like she was made like an onion, that if you peeled away all the layers, you'd get to the middle and you'd find that there was nothing there. She just felt like she was a collection of masks, the masks that she'd been taught as a kid that you wear to meet the people you meet, to use the right fork, to say the right thing. And she did all of those things beautifully. And yet, here she was, a creative writer that needed to be encouraged because she didn't think she was any good. A singer that never would sing, even though she won Miss America talent contest the year that she was competing in that beauty contest. For talent, she won the talent part by singing. And she never did think that she was any good. She just had no faith in herself. It always took me back. It always surprised me because he was this absolutely gorgeous woman that did everything so well, and yet there was nothing for it. I couldn't encourage her enough to do the work necessary to find the essence of Jane. And that's what we all need to do. We have a background. We have a lineage. As wanderers, we came from someplace else that certainly was less distorted than this place. There was less anger. There was less dishonesty. There was more honor and beauty and grace and laughter and joy and thanksgiving and all of those wonderful things. Because that's what happens when you learn to work with light. Working with the light is so different than people imagine it to be. People imagine it to be a matter of getting to the place where you can meditate all day or where you can work on your vibrations all day, you know, to just stay in the higher chakras and feel that wonderful feeling that it does feel when you're there. I'm afraid not. The work comes in being willing to go back down into the red ray chakra, the orange ray chakra, the yellow ray chakra, those three powerful chakras that lie below the heart and that are potentially able to keep us from ever getting into the heart. So I encourage all of us, and certainly myself included, to think each day about the things that we say, the things that move us one way or another. Think about the anger that we have felt. Think about the joy. Think about those things that have moved us one way or another. Doesn't matter whether it's seemingly good and radiant or seemingly difficult and contracting. Think about it. Where did it come from? What in our past caused us to move away from the open heart? And if we keep digging, if we keep paying attention to ourselves, if we keep taking ourselves seriously and doing the work, we begin to see patterns. We begin to see what things have closed the heart again and again in the past, and what things we haven't let go of, what we somehow seem to need to hold on to, even though we know they're just illusions and we're done with them. We should be able just to let them go and forget about them. You know, it doesn't matter who we thought we were when we were 10. But the problem is there's a 10-year-old inside us that needs to be heard. And an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old. I mean, I don't know where your difficulties began. I don't know how you were bruised where the bruising doesn't show. All I know is that all of us have these places of incredible pain and suffering that we bury because they don't work in getting along with people. They're not a good mask. So we bury them. We try not to think about them. We push them aside until something triggers that little 10-year-old, that little 8-year-old or 6-year-old. And for a brief moment, that part of ourselves becomes visible to us. And what a gem that is, you know, potentially. Because if we can take that and work with it, if we can relate it to other places in our lives where we have had the same distortion, as Ra would say, we can begin to work that place of ultimate pain out of the dirt. And we can see it in the light and discover that in its own way, it is beautiful. It is a kind of gem, a jewel that has been buried in the dirt of our consciousness. And when we dig it up and ask it to forgive us for not paying attention, if we can put our arms around that 10-year-old within us that was hurt so badly and just rock that 10-year-old until it begins to balance out. If we can do that, we can begin to let go at last of the scars of the past that should never cast a shadow over our present joy. I wish us all luck in finding these gems, in bringing them into the light, and in understanding at last that the discipline of the personality begins with forgiving ourselves, crying over our pain, hugging those children within us that have not yet been heard, and listening very carefully to what they say, so that we can at last be free, so that our essence can be purged of that childhood pain, so that we can finally be able to serve the love and the light of the one infinite creator.
Thank you, Carla. Did you have anything to add to that, Jim?
Well, just a little. Carla was talking about the pain of the child or the numerous children that lives within us. And I think that that's one of the things that happens in the pre-incarnative state that we don't really think about so much while we're incarnate, because we look at this pain and this way that we maybe were raised that was in a way that blunted our creativity or our individuality or our ability to love or communicate. But I think this is exactly what we program, because we need to have some kind of way of focusing our energy. And the way that we can focus that energy is to look at the situation that is within us or around us and work from there. That usually has to do with the lower energy centers. When Ross said here that the important thing for harvest is the harmonious balance between the various energy centers, I think that especially for wanderers, it's easier to begin in the higher centers where the ideals are and to kind of turn you back on the pain that is there and hoping that you can cover it over with enough meditation or prayer or spiritually oriented experiences that it won't affect you anymore. But I think we went to great lengths of effort to program a situation in which our parents, our siblings, teachers in school, the greater society around us would have an effect on us that would form us in such a way that we would be able then to work from that point to where we really want to go. And I'll just use myself as an example. I have a lack of compassion for myself, which comes out in anger when things I'm working with don't go well. Say I'm trying to build something with a hammer, nail, measure, and tape and all that, and the sawing maybe doesn't go quite right or the hammering doesn't go quite right. And I tend to get upset with myself and have a lack of compassion for myself and to be angry with myself for not getting it right. But Ross suggested that one time when I asked a question about this, that it was my way of learning how to develop a love for myself and to open my heart and compassion to all others by programming a lack of compassion for myself. It would be inappropriate, Ross said, to program a lack of compassion for other selves. That would be of a negative orientation. So I programmed it for myself. And this anger, these little temper tantrums I've had mostly in my youth, but you know the echoes continue to this day, that these angers at myself are ways of focusing me back toward myself so I can see that there is somebody there worth having compassion for. And if I can do that for myself, then I can also feel compassion for others. And I think that all of us go to a lot of trouble to make this kind of a situation available to us in our lives. And it may be a traumatic situation, but it's a situation that offers a great potential for growth once we look into it and begin to work with it and balance all of our energy centers.
I can definitely relate to that. That's always been something I've struggled with, is having compassion for myself. So I must have programmed something similar. Something you said, Carla, about all the little children that are inside of us, mm-hmm. and I'm sure there's myriad ways that those little aspects of ourselves come to the surface, those issues that we need to resolve. But two ways that I've seen in my life in particular that really brought them to the surface. One was having a child, and my husband and I really noticed how uncanny it was that when our son was a certain age, say, for example, when he was six, my issues from when I was six were triggered when my sister left, who was essentially my mom. All of that came up to the surface. And then when my son was, you know, nine, different issues came up based on whether, you know, one of us at that age, and all through his childhood. And then another way that issues came up, I mean, it was almost as if he was mirroring to us the inner child inside of ourselves that needed healing. And another way that issues came up was in our healing process. Whenever we did any sort of holistically oriented healing protocol, such as cleansing and fasting and, you know, that sort of thing, you know, like juice fasting, we would actually, there's something called the reversal of symptoms. And we would actually, as our physical bodies were going through these experiences, certain emotional issues would rise to the surface that were related to the physical body, and they're actually being stored in the cells, is what we later found out. So we had that experience as well, as just possible triggers of those issues coming to the surface. I'm sure there's many others as well.
Oh, so many others. And it really behooves us to pay attention. Just to pay attention. No, I think it's difficult to pay attention because I think we're taught that we're not worth paying attention to. We're told, oh, that's silly, you know. you don't know enough to say that. You know, and just people put us down, people that are older than us, people that should know better, like our parents. And they'll say, well, you know, that's not bad, but you could really do better. You know, you could do this better. And they're not saying, isn't this great? Look what you did, you know. And God bless the parent that does that, because it's just, I always craved to hear that when I was a kid, and I never heard it. I really never did. I would occasionally hear that I'd done a good job, you know. But mostly it was, you could have done this better. See, let me show you the way. You know, and there would be an opportunity for teaching there. And so my little kid, I actually got a doll at one point so that I could focus all of my love for that little child that hadn't had anybody to tell her that she was worth anything, that she was doing well, that she was really doing well. And so I carried that doll with me for years until I felt that I really got it, you know, and I really did love that child so much that it was pretty well healed and balanced within me. And she still sits on a place of, in a place of honor in my room. I love that. I love that little, she's a Raggedy Ann doll. And I love her dearly. But, I mean, you know, we can be creative. We can think of all different kinds of ways to get in touch with our inner child and find out what that child needs, you know, what was missing, what was lacking, what can we do to soothe and love and protect and understand that little kid.
Carla, I need to tell you something. I'm speaking to the little girl, Carla, at various ages, and all the little Carlas all throughout your life, and the adult Carla, and all the various adult Carlas throughout your entire life. This is going to 1,000 different personalities at different points in time. But Carla, you did a fantastic job. And I'm speaking from the heart, and I am speaking on behalf of probably thousands and thousands of people who have benefited from the work that you did, the phenomenal work that came forth because of your willingness to be of service. You did a phenomenally awesome, fantastic, fabulous, perfect, beautiful job in being who you are and being of service, in not only channeling the Law of One, the highest spiritual teaching in the land. That alone, my God, your life has had a profound impact on thousands and thousands of people. That alone has been huge. But not only that, but the service that you've continued to give since then and are doing right now, right this very minute, even in the you know, with all your physical issues that you're dealing with, to do this service, to do this radio show and offer yourself yet again, that is just huge. I mean, anybody else after channeling the Law of One, they could just go and retire and they're done. I mean, you know, and you could have done that and that would have been fine. But I'm going to tell you right now, on behalf of all these people, we love you and we thank you because you've done something so beautiful. You've given us something that we treasure, and it's because of you. And yes, Jim and Don as well, thank you for your contribution. But right now, I'm directing this at you, Carla, and you are beautiful, and you did great. And the things you did as a child must have been wonderful, too, because it brought you to who you are today. So thank you. You did great.
Oh, Monica, you are so beautiful. Thank you so much. That is incredible. Oh, my goodness. If it weren't a radio show, I'd just start crying, but that won't work. Oh, my goodness. I'm bored.
Look it up.
Just thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And, you know, it's my pleasure. It's what matters to me in this life is to serve, not yesterday. I'm glad that I served yesterday, but, man, I want to do it now. And I love it. I love everything about the whole concept of serving. And, you know, I mean, forgive me, those of you who think that Christianity is just, but... To be able to serve Christ, to be able to walk in His ways and follow the way He suggested, you know, that's the greatest thing in the world is to be privileged to be alive in this moment and to be able to offer praise and thanksgiving and follow the Lord. What else is there that's so rewarding and so wonderful? So. Golly, I'm so floored, Monica. That's going to ring around in my head all night. I'll probably sleep on it.
Well, it's recorded.
What I dreamed. I'm sure it'll be something.
It's recorded,
something
so you can play it again and again and just soak it up, because it's true.
Okay, soaking.
Okay, well. All right, our first question for tonight is a follow-up question from last week's nectar broth question. If anybody that listened last week remembers that, this is from JP. The real point of the question was to be about the ego, based on my assumption that those level of beings do not have much or any ego left. I guess he's referring to the higher density beings. And dwell or try to in the light and love of the oneness. I assumed again that partaking in anything in groups would not support total unity and oneness and carry on the old third density illusion of being separate and needing community. I think I heard Carla trying to say that it's a choice, and by choosing to gather is just a symbol and ceremony and would not confuse or set back any growth in seeking total unity and oneness. So in a nutshell, how strong will the ego be? Or can it be controlled and seen for what it is, just an idea, and taken up at will and then let go? Or at what level will it be dropped, if ever, until we rejoin the oneness after eighth density? So much work to be done. I hope I have time. I really don't want 75,000 more years in third density. Too much pain and sadness. Your work gives me great goals and hope to ascend into fourth density. This is from JP.
Okay. JP, the ego is something that has gotten such a bad rap, it's the source of much confusion, let me put it that way. It is an idea created with several other interlocking ideas by Sigmund Freud, a German psychoanalyst who really created the field of psychoanalysis and divided the mind into various parts. And ego was one of them. Id was, you know, impulse. And then there were other parts ascending up to the very highest of human hopes and dreams and intentions. And the ego's place was to take the impulses of the id and look at reality, you know, as it is, and figure out just what impulses would be acceptable and what impulses would be unacceptable. In other words, if the id is looking at a beautiful person of the opposite sex or a beautiful object of desire, the id wants to grab the person and take it off to bed immediately. The ego does a reality check and says, wait a minute, that's not going to work. We can satisfy the demand of the id to make time with beautiful objects of desire, but we're going to have to modify the technique. So something called the reality principle comes in, and the ego looks at the reality principle and says, okay, here's how we can do this in reality, that this will work. Okay, so the ego is part of the self. Ego is Latin for I or self. But it isn't the whole self. It's a component of the personality, according to Freud. Now, immediately, this whole setup was brought into question, and it's always been brought into question by many. It's been shaky ever since Freud brought it out. Some people think that it works great. Other people think that the way Jung changed it around works better. You know, there are so many different ways to look at the human body, the human self, the human mind, body, spirit, I would say, and think about how to integrate all the various portions of the self in a way that is acceptable to society and effective and useful and appropriate. And I remember after 5 years of being in therapy after Don died, my Jungian psychoanalyst said that I was eccentric but well compensated. So I thought that was pretty good. Anyway, the ego is not a bad guy, as Freud imagined the ego. The ego is looking at reality and controlling the lower impulses of the body, mostly, and trying to make sure that the person acts in ways that are appropriate according to society. So, but still wants to, you know, make sure that the demands of the id are met, are satisfied, but finding a better way to do it. Okay, so when you're talking about the ego and, you know, how strong will the ego be, well, of course, in Freudian terms, you're always hoping that it's strong because you wouldn't want the id to win out over everything, you know. You definitely want to have a component of your personality that does a reality check and figures out how to satisfy the needs of the id in a way that's acceptable. So it's kind of hard for me to talk about how strong the ego will be, can it be controlled, seen for what it is, taken up at will, and let go, and all that, because there are many ways of looking at the mind-body-spirit complex in which that word never comes up, and other components are listed, you know, in order to talk about how a person integrates new experiences and stays healthy mentally. So I would say, in a nutshell, that as we progress into higher densities, we will find it far more easy and pleasant to control the needs of the id, because everybody's cards will be laid down on the table. We will be known to each other. As we're known to ourselves, we will be known to each other. Can you imagine that degree of openness being okay in third density? I try to lead a really transparent life. I try to lay it all on the table for anybody who wants to see this is who I am. Blap, here it is, you know. And not worry, you know, if someone feels that I'm a fool or whatever, that's okay. You know, it's I can't take it personally, because what that person is seeing is himself in the mirror. And when anybody loves me the way you do, Monica, it says more about you than it does about me. because it says that you've got a huge heart and you can really love with the best of them. And that's it. You know, that's what we're all going for. We're hoping one day to get to the place where we can love and we can be loved. And that's what it's all about. So I think that in higher densities, we are far more able to love and be loved. And these components of the personality are less boisterous because being open to the truth at all times, there is less need for the managing of things. What we are goes beyond the idea, and that is where your question has its value. That's where your question is good. Are we just an idea? Are we making ourselves up? No, we are not. We can enjoy community. We can enjoy being alone. But beneath it all, there is an essence, a flavor, a scent that is ineffably us and only us ever in all of the universe, in all of time and space. That essence is real. It is not just an idea. It is a thought, but it is a thought that has the creation by the Creator behind it. It is a holy thought. We are sacred beings. We carry consciousness, and only we can love and be loved. So as you look into what happens in higher densities and why in the world would they want to gather together, it is indeed, it's the pleasure in other people's company is just so rich and so wonderful. And we had a staff meeting this past weekend, 2 weekends ago, and I kept thinking to myself, is this how fourth density feels? Because the love was so incredible among all of the people. We were trying to figure out ways that we could serve better. You know, how can we serve our people, our seekers, those that come to us? How can we serve them better? And, you know, so many good ideas and so many good conversations, but so many, above everything else, so many good people focused on something beyond all of us, bigger than all of us, how to serve together. It felt so good. And I think that's a spiritual community, and that's, you know, as we dined, I think it felt a lot like that broth, don't you, Mick?
Oh, yeah. There was such a feeling of camaraderie and open-hearted sharing. The food, I think, served basically the same purpose as Ross spoke of the fifth density broth, and that was to bring us all together and to give us the opportunity of just sitting in each other's presence, enjoying the food, and enjoying the moment together.
So I think that it does nothing to deny oneness for us to be different, for us to have personalities, for us to be eccentric, though well compensated. It doesn't matter at all. If you can love and if you can accept the love offerings of others, if you can do those things, then you're ready to hold more and more light. And how glorious it is to feel your heart beating as one with others who are just yearning to serve. Wonderful. So I hope that I'm sure that you'll make it. There is nothing to worry about. Your vibrations at the time that you pass will tell the truth about you, and it will be a comfortable truth, and it will undoubtedly move you into using more light. And I imagine that you're a shoo-in for fourth density positive.
Okay, that leads right into our last question for tonight, which is from Carl. What is a method by which someone can determine their negative and positive polarities?
Jim, you want to start on that one?
There isn't any. Ross suggested
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
One of the major mistakes that most seekers make is trying to take their spiritual temperature. You know, to try to figure out, well, just where am I along here? Do I have sergeant stripes? Have I made it to lieutenant yet? You know, just where are we? And really, all we have are our intentions of what we hope to do, what we want to do, what we try to do. And it's a good idea, I think, just to have those intentions, to go forth with that that great and glorious high standard of how you want to open your heart and to do the best you can at every moment, and not worry about just how you're doing. Just keep at it. Keep going. Keep trucking. You know?
Yeah, and that nicely dovetails back into the opening riff. Methods by which someone can determine their negative and positive polarities. Watch yourself. Be witness to yourself. See when you react in what you might call a negative emotion, anger, jealousy, all those dark feelings. And find the source. There's always a source somewhere. And by the way, that's the whole thing behind what's that cult, so-called cult that John Travolta is in?
Oh, Scientology.
Scientology.
That's the whole deal of Scientology. Is you're looking to find these engrams, I think they call them, these hidden gems of pain, and dig them up and clear them, and you know there you can get clearer and you can get clearer, and you know if you get clear enough you can become a Hollywood star, and no, excuse me, that's not part of it. I'm being silly. I'm being playful, and I don't mean to insult any Scientologists that are listening. But I mean that's the whole thing is to get clear. But you can watch yourself. You can see yourself go, if you will just take the time to do it. Take yourself seriously. Take yourself seriously. You are a huge person. You contain the entire creation. What was the opening riff said? You contain, in the microcosm, exists all the experience that is prepared. It is as though the infinite contains the universe. You've got it all within you. How are you displaying it? How are you sharing it with the world? What are you bringing forth from yourself to share? How are you serving? Whom are you serving? You know, who do you love? You know, who? and really, you know, ask yourself these things. Hold yourself to account. It's a novel idea, I know, because we're just not trained to take ourselves seriously. But if you realize what a gem you are, what universes you contain, what a huge thing consciousness is that you carry. You can, you know, begin to stop being offhand about this business of living a life. This is a huge opportunity here. This is our last incarnation before graduation. It's a huge opportunity. Goodness, you know, you get up in the morning and here's a day. Here is the privilege of a day. And Jim and I always, you know, dedicate that day to the Creator. If Jim's doing the prayer, he puts it differently. He says, thank you for the privilege of, how do you put it, Mickey?
Of being able to seek and serve the Creator in everything we think, do, and say.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful? I mean, that's what's before us in the morning. And by evening, you know, what have we done with it? What has happened? Have we gotten all raggedy? You know, have we gotten sad? Have we gotten terribly tired? I mean, you really need to look at yourself, to nurture yourself, and come to understand yourself more and more and more. You're not just an onion that when you peel the last layer away, nothing will be there. When you peel the last mask away, there stands the Creator. Go digging, please. Let's find the Creator together.
Now, okay, we're just about out of time here, but just for clarification, Jim, you said there is no method for determining negative and positive polarity. What do you guys think about all those various modalities like kinesiology and a pendulum and what else? Gosh, there's so many different things that people use now to determine, you know, they're doing just that. They're using these tools to seemingly determine their polarity and what their incarnational issues are, and then they clear issues and all that kind of stuff. And so, and I've even heard some people say, well, you know, that they can tell exactly what percentage polarized people are and what density they're from and what their lessons are in this lifetime and all kinds of stuff like that. Do you think they're deluding themselves, or do you think maybe
no,
they
no,
are?
I don't think they're deluding themselves. I think that there are all kinds of wonderful tools. Extrasensory perception is powerful. And if you want to use a pendulum to help yourself figure out what's going on, great. You know, try to use it with honor and dignity and don't lie to yourself about, you know, the results. I mean, let your yes be yes and your no be no if you're going to use the pendulum. Don't fool yourself, because you can come up with a lot of answers that you want to hear if you don't watch it. But, you know, in all of those things, you have to watch it. You have to be careful to use it with honor and give it the respect it deserves. But if that suits you to use a pendulum, use the pendulum. That's great. Use whatever tools you want. I mean, it's an open book test. But just keep working on the selfhood that you are, that you have, so that what you want to be, what you intend to be, is more and more of what actually manifests day by day.
I think the best of those efforts are giving people signposts and a little bit of a hint and maybe some encouragement. I think the worst of those efforts are stroking people's egos to make money. And I think we need to be careful about taking people's compliments about how far advanced we are. Seriously, we need just to keep making the effort. Whatever technique is being used, if the person has ESP or not, nothing can be proven, and I wouldn't want to go on somebody else's estimation of me. Wouldn't suggest anybody else do that. Just keep on trucking and keep on doing the best you can. Inside yourself, you know what you need to do, and you know that you can do it. Do it.
All right. Very good. Thank you so much to both of you. We're out of time, so you guys have a wonderful week, and Carla, we'll be in touch. Let me know what happens with your surgery,
yep.
And I'll let everybody
sure.
else know. Okay. Thank you again. And
thanks, everybody.
Okay, and we will let you know if we're going to have a show. We may or may not be here. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. We are normally here every Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, but we may or may not be here next Friday depending on whether Carla's having her surgery. So check out bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4, th.org. for updates on whether there's a show next week, and also just check it out. It's a great website, discussion forums about the Law of One, and a whole lot of other cool stuff. And also check out llresearch.org. That's llresearch.org, which is the archive website, and you can check out the Law of One material and channeling transcripts and lots of other cool stuff. Thanks once again for joining us, and hopefully we'll see you next week, and if not next week, then the week after, or as soon as we get back.